All right. Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for taking the time with us. Julie DeMoldsmith, Jefferies Power Utilities, Clean Energy and Midstream Analyst, joined with Paul Zimbardo, aka Pauly Z, and Anika Shah here. We're going to talk about Washington policy, energy policy of the day, and everything else going on in the world today. With that said, as usual, guys, do take a quick second. Respond to us on email, chat, whatever form you guys see fit. What are you guys debating? What are you guys seeing out there? We want to hear from you guys, A, and then B, separately and discreetly. Look, if you have any reactions to this debate, we'd love to hear it afterwards as well. This is an ever-evolving effort, a multidisciplinary effort. With that said, and again, look, I think the most substantive conversation that we should be having here is what is going on with respect to Iran, A, and then B, what is that translating into U.S. energy policy? I think from my vantage point, I'd love to hear your thoughts. You're deeply plugged in both the Iran next step circuit as well as the let's talk about U.S. policy here. I think that's really important here in terms of, response. Because I think that's still a very active point. We'll chime in here with a bunch of the policy points once you're done here that we're seeing and observing on a quote-unquote more local level, especially as it pertains to data centers in a few minutes. All right. Thank you, sir. Over to you.
Okay, great. Well, Julian, thank you, and Pauly Z. I hope I can call you Pauly Z too. So is that okay, Paul?
Of course. Okay, great. Yeah, we're all friends.
Wow, I feel like I'm part of the family now. Thank you. So here's what I would say. First things first is that we've now hit all-time highs in the U.S. equity markets today. The oil prices are down 10% just in the last few hours as the Strait of Hormuz seems to be opening up, at least for the extent of the ceasefire that is now currently underway between Israel and Lebanon. And so point number one is that there is relief right now, certainly in the equity markets, but also in the commodity markets about the pace at which this conflict might slow down or end. The second thing I would just say at this moment is our clients are really wondering, okay, what are the implications now of this conflict? You hear a lot about energy security, Julian and Paul, that countries will want to increase their own ownership over their energy efforts. You're hearing some people say that this will accelerate the transition. I think there's some truth to that. But I would say to me, the much more important takeaway is around energy efficiency. And I think that we don't spend nearly enough time as investors thinking about efficiency as the main driver of energy security. And you guys know this story very well, of course. I mean, there's no industry that understands efficiency more than the power sector, where, in fact, you can actually have a lot more energy to the end customer without actually creating new gigawatts, but just making sure it's delivered in a more efficient way. So I think we're going to see a lot more focus on efficiency going forward, regardless of what happens over the next little while. The third point I would say is that coming out of this conflict, the U.S. Is in a much stronger position vis-a-vis emerging markets, and especially vis-a-vis Asia. I think as a large oil producer, for us, we're also a large oil consumer, world's largest oil producer, consumer, gas producer, and consumer. Net, higher gas prices and higher power prices are not great for the U.S., but
请关注公众号思维纪要社，更多纪要请加 VCN20210130。
We make up for it in other parts of our economy, whereas if you are in India right now, this is going to be a much more painful transition and much more painful period. So the U.S. comes out of this, I think, as a net winner compared to other parts of the world. So that's a third thing that's very clear to me. Fourth thing that is clear to me about this moment is that President Trump will feel very, very emboldened to do this kind of excursion again. And so You know, I don't know if you guys, I'm sure you were listening to his speech when he called the ceasefire with Iran, but it was very interesting because he said a couple of times, he said, well, look, the equity markets aren't down by that much, you know, so I can do this and I'm not really feeling much of the pain. And oil price, and even got went on to say that gas prices aren't that high. Like, yeah, they've gone a little bit higher, but even our chief economist, Tom Simons, has seen some great charts out about U.S. gas prices on a historic level. And you guys have your own versions of that. It's not really that restrictive at $4, and those numbers are going to go down from here. And so we're shifting our attention to what could come next as part of this Don Rowe doctrine. Is Cuba, for example, the next one? Could we see more intervention in other parts of the world as the U.S. tries to shore up its geopolitical strength versus its allies? So I think that's another clear takeaway. Net, I would say if you're an investor right now, if you're a client, you are saying U.S. wins versus the rest of the world. You're saying fossil fuel energy will remain higher than it was pre-war for a bit. That's okay. That's not great for the U.S., but the U.S. benefits more than emerging markets that are large energy importers. What we would add to it is that, yes, the transition may accelerate. In other words, solar, wind, batteries, certainly solar and batteries on the power side. You're hearing some of this on the EV side. But what I'm much more interested in is energy efficiency. And you've heard even the Jensen making comments around this about efficiency in AI recently as the way that the U.S. is going to power the AI drive. So that's what's on my mind. You know, in terms of what happens in Iran, we host dozens and dozens of calls with experts. And you guys know better than anyone, when you talk to experts, they all have different opinions. So I could paint a picture that Iran looks more hardlined after this. Iran could also moderate, you know, who knows? And we can talk about that as well. So that's what's on my mind at this moment. How about you guys, Paul and Julian? What are you guys hearing? What's on your mind when it comes to the implications, the medium-term implications?
Look, I think in terms of medium-term implications, I'm not an oil and gas guy, so I won't dive too much into this, but I do think that, look, the oil and gas community didn't respond too much, right? And I think from a lot of folks' respect, I mean, look, there wasn't a pickup in drilling activity to begin with, and so I don't think there's a lot to lose here. More to the point, I think there's still a nascent conversation as to how far any pickup does eventually materialize in, say, the Bakken, where you have the most private participation in amongst oil companies. But again, you know, I'm going to leave that to the O&G community to comment on for what it is. But look, I think beyond that, if I go back to some of the core issues, you know what's making its way to the top of the hit list on issues is the midterm elections now. And that is been front and center, and I have several different manifestations of this conversation that are making their way. Let me start this way, right? In terms of the national implications, I don't really see that many. I know that there's a lot of talk about this. Recent weeks have really garnered renewed focus on what OBBB extension, IRA extension could mean. Let's not get too carried away and too excited here. I know folks are asking us, clean energy dedicated funds are starting to like poke around on the subject. Look, I don't think there's much action for some time to come. OBBB doesn't go away for several years, but it has made its way into the front. It is starting to percolate through investors, right? Again, I flagged that at the outset. I got to lead with that. I don't see it. There has been some early calls from some Democrats to extend the OBBB rules on the ITC, PTC. I still don't see that happening. And as much as SEIA, the organization representing the solar industry in DC, is not asking for it. So we are not likely to get it, right? And I think that's the key thing to start with. All right, I do think, and this is a bipartisan subject, and it will come up regardless, is the extension of manufacturing clean energy tax credit, the so-called 45X rules. And that is likely, especially if that's an easier lift and a more bipartisan lift, is if you leave the ITCs and PTCs behind. So again, I think that's been our core point. That's where we've been focused on this conversation. And again, I would start and end it with that point on the national front. Again, don't expect much there being. Now, with that said, do not underestimate what the California indications that we saw this past week mean. We downgraded PCG a few weeks ago. Folks at the time were wondering why we were getting so cautious in California. Look, the indications were there early. Folks were saying, look, this gubernatorial primary, while we were principally concerned about the lack of motivation but with the gubernatorial office, with the insurance industry on implementing any real reform, a secondary concern was the amount of attention that Tom Steyer was getting. He continues to get, again, big controversial subject this past week. Look, Tom Steyer is openly, for a guy who knows energy, openly critiqued the utility industry, talked about 25% bill reductions, talked about breaking up the utilities in the state. Very harsh rhetoric against the space. Seen some fairly sharp moves lower from the utilities this week. And that's all without there being a consensus perspective that this is actually a likely outcome. So again, if I were to watch one specific vector of political change, it would certainly be that one, first and foremost, if that's the expression. Now, beyond that, what's striking, for as much as the clean energy community has been focused on DC in the context of saying, hey, look, do we get an ITC, BTC extension? Just about no one is asking what Tom Steyer is going to do for his community as it pertains to the clean energy world. He has not admittedly said much on the subject. He's kept it pretty cool. He's only critiqued others rather than offering new carrots for the industry. That is likely to change. He's been critical of NEM to a certain extent, net energy metering. How does that revolve and change? That's what you want to watch. Again, in a world in which resi solar has effectively been imploding in recent days and weeks on the back of the loss of the IRA effective at year-end 25, and what that means here, it's darkest before dawn. The biggest residential solar industry, as it turns out, is California still, and here you go. So, again, watch this carefully. There could very well be some meaningful gyrations on that front as well, but that's certainly what we've been focused on front and center in our world. So, again, now, a third subject. We've heard this several times. So, again, you talk about, like, noise versus signal in our conversations. Look, cybersecurity likely to be a bipartisan ongoing subject. Again, I think you guys would appreciate that. What is striking is how persistent Chinese equipment has been in the inverter industry. Again, this has been sort of an ongoing reality for some time, unspoken truth. Look, I don't think at this point I've become somewhat resigned is not the word right. I've become blasé to many folks saying, look, Chinese equipment's going to get critiqued. I'm like, yeah, tell me when. Right now, I think this is something we're seeing really garner growing attention. Watch the cybersecurity questions as it pertains to the inverter industry specifically. SunGrow, amidst a lot of other vendors, or there are probably three or four that really stand out, that have decent market share in the U.S., certainly with all of the build-out and power gen, becomes a little bit more of a pronounced conversation. Potentially watch evolution there. And so that's another nuance into 2027 that I'd be looking for developments. We just got off the line with the NERC talking about this as well, following up on some of our earlier D.C. conversations. So that would be another major energy topic front and center here. Moving on from there, though, other folks are pinging me here and saying, look, what does this mean on FERC? Where are we going in terms of these other angles when it comes to midterm? Look, I don't think there is much material to point to, right? In many ways, right, if you want to go back to this, you're seeing coalescing in many ways around ESS and storage in many ways as an answer to large loads. I think that's going to continue to be the focus here for any future FERC and data center implementation in many ways. Look, Senate confirmation, we'll see exactly when FERC nominees come up, et cetera. You know, that will be an interesting subject as it pertains to, like, the realities of the day. But from my vantage point, I don't really, quote, see anything glaring as it pertains to that front that I'd be, looking and waiting to. Again, I get that a lot of the executive authorities are being used to extend coal plants. That doesn't change with the House or Senate, right? And so that's really where I'm a little bit more I would downplay any real manifestations of change in thought policy and thought process around this all, right? Again, 202C and all this other fun stuff and extending coal, so be it, right? If anything, I mean, I think what you want to look at on the coal front, again, people asking the question directly here is like, look, on that front, the reality is 202C, you are going to see the administration likely at the request of the industry come up with more realistic rules on coal. You don't extend a life of a coal plant that has material amounts of employment month by month, right? You don't get a paycheck month by month and try to keep this thing going, right? You don't invest in maintenance capex on a month by month basis. It doesn't make sense. it doesn't get any credit for the capacity it offers because it's not even available from season to season. And so from that perspective, do you get annual extensions of this coal plant, these coal plants? That's something that I'd be watching. I think, agree with it or not, I think it just makes sense. If you're going to do it, you got to do it the right way. And that is to have a more of an annualized structure around these coal plant extensions. Watch for that to happen. And again, that might come in sharp contrast to what you might otherwise think in terms of some new administration here. So again, I stress to folks, watch that angle specifically here. Paul, before I turn it back to you, again, if I were to just go down a couple other avenues here, what are folks really watching when it comes to the politics? Look, I say it again, New England and the New England governors and the White House remains my attention. Again, Iran really took away from this, but energy affordability has been at the front and center subject. And I still think that there is a potential pathway where this ongoing working group that has been really working for some months, has met several times over, could very well, quote, come public around their efforts here. I mean, we're hearing a louder drumbeat on this front in recent weeks. Algonquin, which is a pipeline owned by Enbridge, remains at the epicenter of this debate. Continue to watch with it. We just hosted another NDR with a company with New England operations talking about potential gas generation build. Again, I'm not sure I'm ready to go there, but they are seriously talking about it. So again, I stress to you guys, watch this point. I would go on, and I've got more points to talk about what's going on front and center here. But Paul, why don't I turn it to you? I mean, we really got to talk about the data center narrative landscape here. I mean, it is absolutely front and center, especially with Iran maybe going by the wayside. The core conversation of economic growth becomes all the more, not the negative, but the positive, that is data centers and the efforts that are very much stymieing them, I think are definitely still somewhat underappreciated across the community. Paul, over to you, sir. Or Paulie Z,
yeah, no, say. Yeah, no, I'm happy to do it. And I'll dovetail it with affordability because they are inherently linked topics. And I'll start on the data center side. So Nick and team wrote about the main moratorium recently. We're seeing a lot of pushback, more so at the local level, really the hyper local level. Like if you need to annex into or out of a region, you're seeing a lot of these local moratoriums. The Wall Street Journal had a good map recently, and you could see there's contagion. And as crazy as it sounds, you need to be on some of these Facebook groups in the local communities, because you see one community oppose it, and then the data centers try to go to the community next door, and the community next door, they see that their neighbors voted against it and showed up till midnight sometimes, and they say, of course, like, these people did the work, and they said no, so I should say no. So, like, you see this contagion spreading, and, like, a good example where we spend a lot of time, Michigan. Kind of Southeast Michigan is covered in moratoriums. Pennsylvania, a lot of time there. The moratoriums are popping up more and more. And a lot of these are short-term. They're not, like, permanent moratoriums. They're, like, we'll do a 60-day, 90-day, half a year. But you're seeing more and more of these, and just getting harder to build the data centers. And it's generally, if I have to kind of describe it, it's some of these more affluent, more urban, again, not super urban, but more urban areas, or kind of some of the farming communities. Where you've seen a lot less pushback is, quite frankly, where there's less people. So you've seen a lot of these go towards the Gulf Coast. You've seen these go towards like a Wyoming, Cheyenne, Microsoft, big announcement there. They've been in Microsoft. So it's been consistent with our thesis. I think Annika's been talking about this for a while too. It's getting harder to build the places where you continue to be able to build, like Indiana, you're seeing clustering. So kind of a shift from the Northern Virginia, where you can't get the power to begin with, to some of these secondary, tertiary type markets. So that's been a huge trend. It seems like that's only getting worse. The other one where it relates to affordability, a lot of the legislation and it gets support this week. I was going to say last week. It's been a long week. This week, he shows you like some of the bills that he's monitoring. We're monitoring similar ones. A lot of the bills, like they have tough headlines, but under the surface, they're not awful. What they're trying to do is make sure that the data centers, quote unquote, pay their fair share and don't have cross subsidization, which is really what the utilities are pledging to do. It's what the hyperscalers are pledging to do. So you do really need to kind of dig to the next level oftentimes to see kind of what is actually going on. And I'm far more concerned at the local level versus state and federal. We can talk about too in FERC. But then pull.
请关注公众号思维纪要社，更多纪要请加 V CN202101130.
Bring it back also to affordability. The way I've been describing it, if you look back in, there's a lot of intense investor focus and pullback in the stocks in kind of the November, December into January type frame around affordability. That was unusual in an election year. Really, we haven't, unfortunately, we haven't even gotten to the heart of the election season, the primaries, May, June. So we had a couple of updates just yesterday with a rate case in Pennsylvania being withdrawn because of rate affordability issues. The Virginia governor proposed a return on equity, so just a profit cut for, I believe it was just Dominion in Virginia, but in Virginia. So the question is kind of did we peak too early? Are those concerns going to come back and kind of bubble up? I think they will across the country. So there's a lot of states that you do need to be watching. New Jersey's kind of the epicenter last year. Does that kind of intensify again or does that wither away? Wisconsin's another one we're watching. So there's going to be a lot of kind of little hot spots to watch. So unfortunately, it's keeping us very busy monitoring all over the country.
Paul, thank you for that. And, you know, credit where it's due. You and Julian have done a phenomenal job tracking all of this stuff and really alerted me a year plus ago to this growing backlash, or at the time, at the start of the backlash. And then we've been writing a lot about it since. So kudos to you guys. And thank you. My question for you guys is, you know, I'm looking at the Sightline report, and I know we introduced you to these folks who are looking at the delays around data center construction, and like the numbers, if you just like think about it for a second, they're pretty incredible, right? Like only an eighth of all announced projects are under construction. Right. And like the difference between announcement and construction, those two numbers are now even diverging further. Like, have you guys thought about what the implications of that are? Like, what are the implications on AI? What are the implications on the hyperscalers? Like, what are the implications if only and I get it. Like, most of those projects were not going to get built ever to begin with, but still half maybe were, or a third maybe were, not an eighth. Any thoughts? And then I have to run, but I would love your
thoughts. Yeah. Look. Let's cut to the chase here on this one. I think folks are you're looking at a dramatic escalation in noise, right? I mean, and this is what I really want to emphasize, right? You have ERCOT, which is the state Texas, you know, coming out with a forecast, preliminary long-term forecast that by 2032 the state's going to see total electric generation demand grow by fourfold. I mean, come on, like. The noise in the system has reached epic levels, right? And so therefore, to say that only one out of eight is moving forward on construction, I mean, like, give me a break, right? And even, let's be honest, out of those that are moving on construction, you know, clearing land is like civil work and probably fungible with a lot of other land use applications beyond data centers. Let's just make sure we understand. Look, at the end of the day, we could talk about the state of Texas building 200 gigawatts of data centers. We could talk about the entire country building less than 20 gigawatts a year. I just want to make sure we're on the same page about this. So again, I think you got to be very careful on it. The report highlights it.
You're saying look at Texas. I got to move to Texas, Julian. I got to come down there. I got to come down there. Have me. Invite me down there, man. Yeah.
All the time. Okay. Yeah, you got it. Yeah, I mean, thank you.
Thanks so much.
All right. Well, we'll keep going on the closing out the subject. Yeah. Thanks, Anakin. All right, Paul, go for it.
Thanks, Anakin. But yeah, no, I don't know if people hopefully can see my screen. Like again, Julian and I were debating this. I mean, I don't know what adjective you want to use to describe this forecast. I mean, Texas is around 100 gigawatts, and the latest projection, which just came out 2 days ago, so these light blue lines are the prior forecast. The latest forecasts are going to go from basically 100 to 370 by 2032. It's just that's not feasible, not remotely feasible, whatever constraints you want to layer in. So kind of what's, and I think if I put it into this report too, here you can see this is like the more realistic forecast, which is still a lot. That includes kind of this is everything. This isn't just data centers. But like going from round numbers 100 to 140 by 2030 is still very significant growth. It's just like those other numbers are kind of preposterous, and it kind of reduces the credibility of everything. So the term of art that's being used increasingly by the RTOs is phantom load, rather than fake load. But it's something to just really be cognizant of as well. But yeah, that Sightline climate report, we have a recap of it if anyone wants to get the text summary. But data centers are being delayed. And I've actually had a lot of inbound investor questions from like the tech community and others, because it's more of a surprise to them. Like Julian and I live and breathe infrastructure, and if you tell me you're building a $1 billion plus project, let alone a $10 billion plus project, I'm going to guess it's delayed, just generically. So I think that's one thing that's happening, and kind of where it's most relevant, and one of the big debates, if you're a power investor, take a look at what's happening in ERCOT. So like in ERCOT, you've actually seen power prices decline quite significantly. PJM prices continue to increase. And why is that? My best guess is the delays really matter in Texas, because Texas, you're adding relentless solar and storage. Renewable economics just don't really make that much sense in PJM, especially like we build merchant batteries in Texas. You don't build merchant batteries in PJM. So if you have a delay in Texas and the supply keeps coming and the demand does not show up as fast, power prices go down. In PJM, if the demand is delayed but you're not building new supply, well, you're just kind of pushing things to the right. So it's less existential in PJM versus Texas.
Yeah, no, indeed. Look, again, maybe just to conclude on a couple of points before we call it here. And again, if you guys have other things we should be talking about, ping us here, email, chat, whatever else stands out. Look, I would just make a couple of things, right, to close it out. Number one, look, you're going to continue to see a decent cadence of announcements across the central portion of this country through the course of the next few weeks with 1Q, right? I think that's what you're going to see. That 1Q is going to precipitate those actions. You're already seeing it even today in the context of Indiana. That's important. Separately, I would say in the context of nuclear, I think you're going to continue to see nuclear policy that really stands out, especially as it pertains to EDF and the LPO office moving forward on supply chain. That's going to be a big focus here in the next few months. Watch it. A third point, I actually think that you're going to continue to see real friction as it pertains to the strategy, right? You're going to see friction on this big procurement, this record procurement in the U.S. around new gas generation in the PJM market. I think the states are going to push back vociferously about mandating procurement and just simply saying, well, look, we don't want to be held holding the bag. So therefore, we are going to basically step down on the amount of procurement that we're going to ask to do writ large. And we're simply going to mandate that if you don't show up with backstop, you are going to be subject to curtailment, right? It's going to be as simple as that. So if you elect not to do a bilateral, and we'll do a modicum of procurement ourselves, there's going to be consequences when it comes to curtailment. And it'll be like, you accept a curtailment regimen, which, by the way, could also include behind-the-meter generation, which is sort of fungible with that in some respects. Or you agree to some sort of bilateral agreement, which that is effectively posted and well documented with the grid operator, that you are indeed responsible for quote, bringing your own supply. So again, watch that progress here in the next few months, but really specifically next few weeks as far as it pertains to data center policy here. So take care, guys. Thank you very much for taking the time. I appreciate everyone's engagement this morning. And with that, maybe, Paul, unless you got anything else, we should probably close it out.
Yeah, no, thanks, everybody. Feel free to follow up if you want that Sightline climate info, too.
Excellent. Thanks, everyone. Take care. Cheers. Have a great day.